He's just a hack. He's just an absolute hack. And he gets his ass kicked by his teammates every week. It's just, you know, it's terrible. It's just terrible.
Welcome back to the... Oh, my God. I don't even know what show this is. Welcome back to Hack City. I am Joe DeLeon, the first team. Yeah. Joe DeLeon, Sean Anderson, two former college football players from the University of Rhode Island. Sean, I don't usually dive into the comments that much just because, like, I try to avoid the negativity. I need to do a better job of, like, responding to some of them. But some guy wrote this essay about how we don't know what it's like with football in Montana. I was reading it yesterday and I couldn't help the irony of his statements. But no more comments. I'm going to stop reading the comments, Sean. But on that note, go ahead. We're going to say,
I don't know what to make of some of these, the commenters. I don't mind them. I think
most of them are very polite and very nice, and I like reading them, and I try to respond to some of them. And then there's the essayists that try to point out our flawed logic.
There's just times where I don't know if I'm getting played or not. Guide Life said, Sean, looking good, looking like you're losing weight. I'm fatter than ever. I don't know if he's doing a bit on me. I don't know if I'm having bits worked on me by these
blasted YouTube loser.
Like, I don't know. I can't tell sometimes. And he gets me a little like you're underwater. You're scuba diving. You're getting your senses. I'd have no sense yet.
He got your stupid ass.
No, he did not.
BetOnline gets my stupid ass every single week. Can you share with our listeners a quick word from our friends over at BetOnline?
You know what I did with BetOnline last night that they're not going to like that I said, but I had to do it because I want to use BetOnline later in the week. I did not bet. There was a house wafted, 8-leg NBA parlay, whole bunch of rebound props, scoring props. Once I heard the the numbers getting floated.
And I said, bet that didn't hit.
It did not hit. I said, you guys got it. You guys got it. Because I'm a responsible gambler. They lost. I'm sensible. I know what I needed to do. And now when the weekend comes along, I'm going to bet on some FCS football. And I'm not going to be sitting there with a bad taste in my mouth knowing that I couldn't hit the over on Anthony Davis rebounds. Regardless, head to BetOnline today. Remember to use our promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Joe, you were really giving that iced coffee a housing right now during the read, weren't you? I mean, you had to get every...
I don't know. How did you... Well, I wanted to get it in before, instead of doing it when my mic was unmuted and trying to... Whatever.
I mean, there's God not forbid a drop I have some... that thing. Talk about distracting.
Screw yourself.
You're gonna gallon of Yoo-hoo.
Today's episode, we are going to be sharing our top five players from the college football season. We're gonna go in reverse order. The guys that we thought had the most impactful seasons, the best seasons, maybe were the most important for their teams, all that and more, as well as just our thoughts on the proposed subdivision that the NCAA Commissioner Charlie Baker has proposed, or the president rather has proposed. We're going to talk about that because that is very impactful for the entire college football landscape. Also for our FCS listeners, FBS, all that stuff coming up and more. Sean, I want to start us off here though. As I said, our top five players from the college football season, guys that we thought were most impactful for their teams and the best performances. Any position, by the way, this, you know, we can talk offensive and defensive linemen. So I'm going to start us off with a guy that I talk about a ton that I don't think gets enough national love. And I think actually was very important for his team's success and completely boosted the offensive production, the run game production, and also the performance of the offensive linemen around him. And I'm talking about Talese Fuaga from Oregon State. He is one of the most exciting offensive linemen for me to watch. And it, for anyone who doesn't pay attention to O-line play, when there's a guy that you like really like, you always keep coming back to him and you always keep coming back to him, pulling up clips and just seeing the prowess, the strength, the athleticism for a guy that's like 330 pounds at 6'5", the way that he's built, he moves at an unbelievable level. And on top of that, he's just burying guys. He's mean. He's physical. I really believe that Oregon State's success this year offensively was because he elevated the rest of that group to an even higher level.
I like that you have an offensive lineman on your list. I do too. Not at five, though. You've been high on Oregon State's offensive line, and Oregon State did a good job this year. They made it entertaining. You know, I didn't expect them to be a top five team at the end of the year. I didn't expect them to be top 10, but I expected them to do what Oregon State does, make it competitive, make it fun, give us one last fun season with the Pac-12, and they did. And then partially due in part to the run game. So I'm cool with that, and I know you're high on your number five player. My number five player, Brock Bowers, Georgia. Some people could have him higher, some people could have him lower. If I'm doing a full list, I see him as truly impactful, and when Georgia was truly peaking, he was the main component. I don't know how high he's going to go in the draft. He could go as high or as low. It's just so interesting to see a player so dynamic at the tight end position, and that became the main offense for Georgia. And when he went down, they still won, but you could tell it was more teeth pulling. It was not, okay, we have Brock in the game, we can get our regular offense back on schedule. He just had such an impact on such a really good team. It's hard to do that when you're the best team in the nation all season and you're the best player on that team. That's going to deserve recognition. He's going to get plenty of recognition, and he's going to be a star at the next level. He had a great season also.
I did not include Brock Bowers on my list just for the, like, he was very impactful, and I have him. He's probably might actually end up being graded as my top prospect in the 2024 NFL draft. My problem was, though, and I agree, his impact was important because we saw against Alabama when he was banged up, was not able to play was not really able to play to his true form and alter that game the way that we're used to seeing him do. He was held in check because he couldn't move as well. I just think that because he was so banged up, his numbers weren't as good as they could have been. And, you know, I was a tiny bit disappointed with that we were deprived of the real Brock Bowers.
Yeah.
My number four player, defensive end from UCLA. UCLA's defense was so dominant this year. It was performing way above expectation. Their defensive coordinator is now on his way to USC. They did so well with that front seven that it kept them in football games despite a lot of offensive ineptitude because of the shuffling at the quarterback position. Lietu Latu is my number four player. He is a double-digit sack getter. He's had multiple multi-sack games, multi-tackle for loss games. I watch him play, and he's just a relentless football player. He embodies a really good college defensive end where he's just going full speed until the whistle blows. He misses a tackle. He loops back around. He runs back after the football. Another one of those players kind of fits the description here I'm talking about with Tulis Fuaga, where his performance heavily boosted the level of play of the rest of the guys on the defensive line.
Yeah, Latu is a beast. Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. Really impressive. You wonder what the hell happened with UCLA this year. You wonder, they were fine. They were fine. They should always be better. They should be able to recruit California like madmen. They should be better. It's disappointing that Latu didn't have that full team to accompany him. There was not enough complimentary action from UCLA for Latu. He's a good enough player where the team needed to reflect how good he was with more success, more wins, and better overall defense, better overall offense. I'm cool with your number four there. Similarly, same vein for my number four. Jaden Daniels, he was stellar. I thought he had a fantastic season.
Low on him.
That's not low. That is high for Jaden Daniels. No. I am not low on him. He's in my top five, Joe. How is that low? What is he, your number one?
What? He's not my number one, but he should be a little higher than four.
They should have won more games.
Sorry.
They should have won more games. Continue. I'm sure I fall into the category of quarterback game win correlation. It's stupid. I know pitcher wins are a big deal.
There
also
were games where they put up 40-something points, and he played out of his mind. Look, I used to say the same
He's
shit.
He's in my top five. He's in my top five. Right. I am coming around. Right. I did come around on him. Okay. I thought there were times where I was out on him this season. He put himself in harm's way tons. But then I realized he kept playing. He kept playing. And I started to love him because he's like a crash test dummy playing quarterback with a rocket arm and great speed and agility. But he got lit the hell up and he kept getting up. Jane Daniels, fantastic season. Going to win the Heisman. He did enough at LSU to secure the Heisman. His numbers are gaudy. Even though the SEC was weak this year, it was. So LSU quarterback picking on the bad teams, insane numbers. It all clicks. It all works out together to be a Heisman winner. He had a great year. Great year. I'm going to respect the year.
I'll get to my thoughts on Jay Daniels in a second. Number three for me was Ollie Gordon from Oklahoma State. Best performance by a running back this year. There's a lot of running backs that had strong seasons and strong statistical performances that provided a necessary role in certain offenses. But I feel like Ollie Gordon was on a team where Alan Bowman just like constantly lowered the level of success and the capability of this offense constantly. And they struggled to throw the ball in a lot of games. And that's what led to some of their losses. It's what led to them having to, climb back from big leads. All Ollie Gordon ever did was pick up huge splash plays. And he's so fun to watch run, man. I saw people comparing him to Derrick Henry. He is way more flexible than Derrick Henry. He is not Derrick Henry. He is tall. He is long. He's got a lot of wiggle to him. He moves really, really well. I think that Ollie Gordon, whenever he decides to go to the NFL, is going to be a really good pro because he's got the build. He's got the speed. He's got all of it to be a good player in the NFL. And I'm disappointed he's not going to be on the Heisman podium because he had a really, really stellar year. Just sucks because he's on a bad team. But his performance is what made Oklahoma State relevant enough to be in the Big 12 championship game.
I don't know what week it was. I think it was maybe somewhere in between weeks 6 through 8, where Gordon just across all platforms got recognition. I think he had like a 250-yard game and 3 touchdowns. And everyone is just like, whoa, Ollie Gordon? And then the trope came, Ollie Gordon's the best player nobody's talking about. And everyone started deciding to talk about him collectively at the same time. That was a funny little intricacy I saw from his season where it was, okay, one moment, now he's on the radar. And he's been on the radar since. He's been a great running back, great college running back. Let's see what happens next level. Sometimes you just don't know, but watching him this season, it's hard to not have faith that he's going to be a certified dude in the NFL. My number three, I'm giving this player number three partially because of his incredible skill and talent and partially because of the wherewithal of the program to utilize the transfer portal, bring him in, and just maximize the impact on their offense. That's Keon Coleman from Florida State. He had a fantastic season. Jump ball after jump ball. Ridiculous catch after ridiculous catch. And Florida State should get an award for their work in the transfer portal this year. Their offseason actions and adding Keon Coleman was stellar. Florida State, without him this season, we might be looking at a loss. We might be looking at not 13-0 team, not all the drama, but because they loaded up on such a stellar wide receiver that not only met but exceeded expectations for the Seminoles, they were able to create 13-0 and then unfortunate Jordan Travis situation. But Keon Coleman, number three for me. I don't know if my stock could be higher in him.
I love Keon Coleman. He's probably going to be my number two wide receiver in the 2024 NFL draft. I mean, the guy is just a physical freak. Does not make my list because I think he doesn't really have the stats to be in the stratosphere. I don't think he even had 1,000 yards, which he was banged up for part of the year. So
they had him returning punts, Joe. I like
it. I know. I know.
I don't know why. That gets me going. You know what? Florida State recognized this is our best player on offense and probably our best player in space. We're going to have him return punts. I love it.
One of those guys that in like 10 years, you'll be sitting at a bar and you'll be watching him in the NFL. And you'll be like, wait, he didn't have a 1,000-yard season in college football? It's just going to feel really weird because you would have expected that he would have put up insane stats. Yeah. A guy who did put up insane stats at number two, guy that you already mentioned, Jayden Daniels. Just quick thoughts here. You talked about how great he was. I see not only someone who put up video game type numbers, but he was a highlight reel waiting to happen every single time he touched the football. Jayden Daniels was so impactful. I do still think that there is a argument to be made. He shouldn't win the Heisman because of the fact that they lost the three most important games of the season and they needed to get those wins. And it would have, you know, put them back in the college football playoff. He can't control his defense. So I give him a bit of a pass on that. Their defense was horrible, but he still is far and away top two player in college football. Top two player in college football because he just was electric in every single game. If he had trouble throwing it, he was running all over defenses and vice versa. So Jayden Daniels deserves that love.
Oh, you're kind of low on him. Why isn't he number one? Jeez.
Yeah, I almost said something very, very, very aggressive, but go ahead. You knew what I was about to say.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know what you were going to say, and I don't need to know what you were going to say. I had him at four, and you had him at two. And you're talking that talk. I expected him to be number one.
All right, who's your number two? Who's your number two?
Joe Alt, Notre Dame. He's the best offensive lineman prospect I've seen in a while.
Oh yeah, we're not ranking prospects though.
Hey,
idiot. He hit some rough games, dude. He hit some bad games.
He is the prototype. He's the prototype, Joe. He's the guy. This is the guy. When I watch Notre Dame, I don't care about dumb quarterback. I don't care about running back that everyone told me is super strong. And then I don't care. I watched the left tackle all year. I watched Alt all year. He's the best. He's fantastic. Fantastic.
I like Joe Alt, and I get it. He is disturbingly flexible for a guy that's 6'9". And he moves at an unbelievable level for a player of that size. Because normally we get these tall guys and they're waist benders and they don't move as well. So there's a trade-off. But you're right, he is the prototype. I just think that there were a couple games where he was a little shaky. And I thought there were more steady and consistent offensive linemen than him. He's still probably going to be offensive tackle one for me in this year's draft. So, you know, don't get it twisted that I don't like him.
Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm just too high on him, and that's
fine. No, I get it. I don't think it's a bad pick.
The bell curve will even itself out and everybody will end up being right. I will just be on the far end of the bell curve just because when I watch him, I watch the model of consistency. And well, if he's getting beat, it's schematic. It's schematic, Joe. That is coaching. That is he doesn't get beat. All right, he just doesn't.
I mean, he does get beat. I've watched him get beat a number of times. But you're right though. There is the projection on him is this is an all pro. There, like, I don't disagree with that. It's a good pick. I just think from like the college football perspective, I thought Fuaga was a little more consistent just playing the college football season. Those are my final.
That's fine.
Number one for me, Marvin Harrison Jr., Ohio State. I don't think, and there's a lot of pushback on him being on the Heisman podium because he wasn't a top five or so. He wasn't one of the top receivers in terms of statistics. Like, there's a couple guys ahead of him in each category. But we have to look at the struggles that Kyle McCord had and this offense had. Ohio State does not win a couple of the games that they won. And they also aren't in the Penn State and Michigan games. They're not in that Michigan game as close as it was if it wasn't for Marvin Harrison Jr. He is the reason why their offense kept moving. He was so necessary for them to produce that there were games where he didn't really do much. And we saw the offense sputter because they couldn't find ways to get him the football. So Marvin Harrison Jr., best receiver, best athlete, best football player in all of college football.
It's a fun, you know what? Getting a wide receiver on the Heisman ballot with such a loaded quarterback, I had so many good quarterbacks. It's impressive. It's deserved. I'm not going to, you know, die on a hill about Marvin Harrison shouldn't be number one. That's actually a silly argument to have. It's silly to counter that with, oh, he shouldn't be number one. He's good enough to be somebody's number one. He's your number one. He's not mine. But he is good enough to be the number one.
If you say Bo Nix, I'm ending this show.
Why? Well, first of all, there shouldn't be an issue if I said Bo Nix. There should not be an issue.
If you say Bo Nix, I'm ending this show.
If I did, there shouldn't be an issue with it.
Who's your number one?
What's your beef with Bo Nix?
No. Who's your number one?
Michael Penix Jr.
I actually still hate that. I also still hate
that. Well, that's ridiculous. I'm sorry. That's ridiculous. You played in probably, I would wager, the most competitive conference in game heart effort. And then
he just had a bunch of bad games.
Oh, did he have a bunch of bad games? But did he put the team on his back and take them to an undefeated season in the Pac-12? Did they beat Oregon twice? Beat Oregon? Joe, he beat Oregon. Both coaches in that first game tried to give it away. The quarterbacks in that game, in the first one, just said, all right, our coaches are losing their minds. We have to go do something. Michael Penix ended up getting that win. Good. And then rematch time, what did I do? Oh, all I did was win since that game. All I did was win since the Oregon game. I'm Michael Penix Jr. And then, okay, we're playing. All we've done is win, and we beat them. Oregon's 9.5-point favorites against us? Stupidity. Michael Penix Jr. did the thing. He won games. He won games. Magic season, Magic team. I'm fully bought in because your reaction right there made me fully buy in about Magic team because you don't have that magic in you. I've been waiting all year to
give me that. I'm fully bought in. Brother, I was bought in. You've been trying to buy in,
but you have not fully bought in.
I picked them to go to the college football playoff before the season even started.
Look,
we need to remember that. We need to remember that I was in on the offensive line, the run game, the receivers, all of that shit. I was in on Washington before you were.
At times it felt disingenuous. It felt like, okay, you didn't really that glow of acknowledging the Magic. You wanted them to be Magic team, but you didn't. I didn't feel like you really bought in on the Magic.
I even pitched them and said to you, "You didn't come up with this thought until I said that I thought that they were this year's TCU." But no, go ahead, produce the narrative you would like to produce, Sean. I get it.
I'm not producing a narrative. You can't just wake up and say and just start screaming Magic all the time. No, it has to hit you. And it hit me. It hit me.
It hit week one.
No, it does not hit week one. You cannot have Magic team week one because they weren't the Magic team in September. They weren't the Magic team then.
Yes, they were. You weren't watching them. No, they weren't.
September Magic?
No, they weren't. They were beating the shit out of bad teams. Is that magical?
I'm saying.
No.
Oh, my God. You know not one thing about Magic.
Okay, Magician Sean.
Magician Sean. I'm just saying I fully acknowledged and embraced, whereas I feel like you're 1 foot in, 1 foot out.
That's not true. Let's get to this final topic before we wrap up. It's been proposed, and I think that there's a lot of complexities to this. It's been proposed by the NCAA, the new president, Charlie Baker, the intent to create a new subdivision that will allow programs, college programs, to opt in or out of compensating their athletes directly in basically in an NIL-based system that they are representing the school, which is pay for play. They're putting them on a salary.
Yep.
To read a quote from Ross Dellinger's article on Yahoo Sports, shout out Yahoo Sports. I think I know somebody who works there. However, the most impactful, this is from the article, however, the most impactful benefit of this new model is a framework in which schools can directly compensate athletes through a trust fund. Schools within the new subdivision will be required to distribute to athletes thousands of dollars in additional educationally related funds without limitation. My big thought with this is that, one, the NCAA and Charlie Baker, I actually am going to applaud him for once. They're getting ahead of the capability and the possibility of the SEC and the Big Ten trying to secede and create their own version of this. If you bring to the table the framework for something like this, the big conferences are going to buy in. And they're probably going to reactionarily figure out a way to make this work for them. But it's now on the table. And if they don't have to be the ones governing it, they're going to let the NCAA be the ones governing it. I also think that the aspect of this, that the funds are coming from a trust fund, we're not relying on boosters. We're not requiring for this money to be funneled through boosters that are, let's be honest, already screwing over kids. Like, there's already more and more instances being brought up with Florida and Texas A&M and all these instances of guys signing predatory contracts, signing contracts that they're not getting their money. When you go through the trust fund, there's probably a mechanism for it to be publicly monitored. And it also enables and makes it a lot more simple for these guys to get the money that they're due. I would also bet there's probably going to be some sort of salary cap. I'm excited because this is a framework that I never would have thought of that is probably going to allow for 50, 60, maybe 70 teams that are enticed and interested in doing this and being a part of this new separate subdivision of college football that will create an incredibly competitive environment. And you know what? As much as people talk about with the identity of college football that the bad teams are still part of the ecosystem, I would argue, I think that in the modern era of college football, I'd rather not be subjected to having to see Vanderbilt or Wake Forest or I'm trying to think of like another crap team that doesn't even try.
Georgia Tech?
So Georgia Tech fans are going to get pissed if you say that because they think that they're national championship capable.
No. Georgia Tech is a fair answer for that question.
Okay. Well, I'm telling you right now, they're one of the most delusional fans.
I'm right about that answer.
You're right. You're absolutely
That's
right.
All I needed
I posted a video on Ruffino and Joe like 8 months ago, and some goober Instagram page manager, which who the hell runs an Instagram page anymore, found the clip, posted it on his story, and then messaged me and was like, send me this paragraph. Usually if somebody sends you a paragraph, you know that you won. But there's a lot of Georgia Tech fans that think that. What I'm getting at here, though, is that I think that we're now in a state of college football where I would like to focus on the teams. And I think there's reasonably 70 or so that are willing to do this, that are willing to produce a competitive environment. And I think it's also fun for some people that are going to sit here and say, oh, the G5 is going to die. I think that there's going to be Power 5 teams that choose not to do this. And I think that there's going to be G5 teams that do choose to do this that can ascend and go on to become really good football programs because they're up and coming. You think a team like Liberty isn't going to put a bunch of money into something like this?
Well, does Liberty have 30,000 per student athlete? Because that's is
they've got a lot more money than we think that they do.
Great point. I gotcha. This is expensive. It's expensive to do. And initial gut reaction is here's more separation in college football. Here's the separation. And when you go down these and the perspective of being a former athlete, you're looking like I've never once cared if athletes got paid. Go ahead, do it. It's never once bothered me the idea of a college football player, a college volleyball player, a basketball players getting a commercial. Do a local read for the tire shop. Or pizza bullies or whatever. You know, none of that has ever bothered me. And if it's Gatorade, it's Gatorade. And if it's the wing joint, it's the wing joint. And the pushback is crazy, but we're past that now. Now the controversy is going to stem from where do these schools that are on the fringe, not the 20 or 25 that are in the green annually, where do the fringe schools get the money to do this? Because they're going to want to partake. Like, let's just say Wisconsin. Let's say they're on the fringe, right? Maybe somebody a little bit lower than that, but let's just stick with Wisconsin.
Like Indiana.
Indiana better. Indiana, you're looking at this school, right? Okay, football, basketball going bonkers. I think they have a really good volleyball team. Boom. You got three sports that do well for the students in attendance and fans. But now, if you want to make that if you want to climb into that subconference, subdivision, where you need to have, I don't know, $6 million annually just to dole out to the players to get qualified and not even go beyond that for pay-for-play stuff, how do you get that? You're either raising tuition or you're cutting sports. And I'm just, I've never been a fan of cutting sports. And most of the time, people that don't like cutting sports, like me, we're talking Olympic sports, secondary sports, whatever, like me, have some sort of association. They have family members that played them, and you can look down the barrel and be like, oh, if they were playing now, if I had relatives or friends that were playing now, they wouldn't have been able to play because their sport got cut because of these new this new subdivision, because we're focusing too much on football and basketball. I understand that side of the aisle.
Yeah.
But more importantly, it's a free market. It's a free market, and nobody ever promised it was going to be fair, ever. And this could be a great lesson for athletes and, hey, you weren't in the top 0.1% to go play softball at Oklahoma or Nebraska because they're in this or to get paid for it. You can still play anywhere if you love the sport, but it's going to be a wake up call reality, cold world moment for a lot of athletes looking at the doorstep like, oh my gosh, this is how it came down.
I don't think so much. I don't like that. Now that I'm kind of thinking what you're saying, I don't really think that's necessarily going to happen. They're going to be cutting sports because here, look, as I said earlier, it's not relying on booster money, but there's still schools that aren't necessarily in the green in terms of return on the amount of money that the football program makes, but they still have booster money. You know, they've got wealthy, influential sure. boosters. I'm sure that they can directly donate to this trust fund to fund the football program.
Miami will have an incredible, they will clear it. They will clear the requirements. Yeah,
even like a team like Arkansas can find the money.
Arkansas, a little different. Mississippi Jerry State Jones will get Arkansas going. Mississippi State's a great one.
Indiana has talked about, and it's been talked about, how they're now realizing they need to make more of a contribution NIL. And I think that they have the money, they have the alumni to put more money into this. And also, the TV contracts are going up, and I think that's a big reason why this is now being presented, is that the TV contracts are at astronomical numbers. That's enough to fund some of this. Not solely, but provide significant funding for this.
I have never cared once how much money a school is bringing in. It's not in my makeup to care about what the richest school is or what the poorest school is or how much money they're getting from TV, how much money they're getting from advertisers. I don't care about that. I care about the product on the field, and I care about student athletes. I do. I want them to have the experience, whether they play, sit, start, legend, nobody even remembers them. That's the experience. You worked, you got an opportunity, and if those start dwindling, I'm not going to be all for it, but I will respect and recognize free market. This is what it dictates, and eventually it will work itself out. But I am embarrassed for college athletics at times to see how quickly and rapidly they're just jumping into things. And I you know what, Baker and legislation and admins, I'm sure have been working on this for 2 years, ever since the rumblings of NIL. I know Baker just got there. It's all in the works, but I feel like it's embarrassing that they keep on moving and capitulating to whoever's shaking the ass with the most money. And I could be embarrassed for it, but I can also acknowledge, hey, these athletes have a right to get paid. They can go earn their money if they're good enough. It's American dream stuff. It's, hey, you can play this sport. People want to see you play this sport. I'm not going to stand in your way of getting paid for it. And if somebody wants to spend their money to have you come to their school and you like the school and you like the program, go do it. No problems, no issues whatsoever. There's just a couple drawbacks that we're going to see illuminated more down the stretch.
We'll see what ends up happening with all this. Folks, thanks for tuning in at Joe DeLeon, at Sanderson Radio. Hit that subscribe button and we will be back with...
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.